It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
This hour is brought to you by Jewel Osco.
Kevin Fishbane.
My guy Fishy Business, K. Fishbane.
Fishy Business?
Fishy Business, what I call him whenever I have him on the show, Fishy Business.
Bears beat writer for The Athletic.
I just try to work hard and tell good stories. I should also note, I know the sports caster of the year for Illinois is no longer covering Illinois team, and I am not leaving to cover the Detroit Lions.
All right, well, good.
Kevin Fishbane talking Bears.
Hey, Kevin. Kevin Fishbane from The Athletic.
I love your name.
It's a great name.
Yeah, great name.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I thought we were going to get an updated open. I really did, because there was something that was said last week on these airwaves about our next guest. Kevin Fishbane is on Twitter at @KFishbane. Senior writer at The Athletic is with us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today, twitch.tv/Chicago670, The Score. I thought we were going to have Matt Eberflus saying about our guest, say, hey, that's Illinois sports writer of the year. They don't give that out by accident. And no, they don't. That was cool to hear, wasn't it?
That was very cool to hear, Dan. And I'm sure, as you know, from being in many media rooms, nobody had any comments about it when I showed up to Hallis Hall the next day.
Oh, no. Teachers, Pat, what happened?
There was several texts exchanged. I think, that's fine, though. Hey, I would rather get, if you're going to get made fun of for something, I'll take that.
Yeah, it's envy. That's what it is. Everybody is just envious, and anybody else would have loved it had they gotten a similar compliment from the Bears head coach. So, but it really was cool. I don't think he was just shining your shoes on that one. I think he was serious about having fun doing that, because I think it came through in the article about just how much he loves teaching.
Yeah, and thanks for that, Dan, because I do think that, like, my goal going into the piece when I first pitched it was this guy just loves talking football. Like, this is where he is at his best, in his element, and obviously that was proven and affirmed. And I think for him, he agrees. Like, that's what he just loves to do. And he got an opportunity to sit there and teach for you know, our hour long. I think we're sat together for like 45 minutes. I learned a lot from that session. And we'll see if, as I joked, we'll see if he keeps the same energy a week from Monday, if I'm writing something about a horrific fourth down decision that led to the 0-1 start to the season. Who knows?
I think that's the big part of it for me is we heard a lot of confident comments out of Ryan Poles on Wednesday, and that's great. I love that you feel like you're in that place, and I appreciate the confidence in which you're delivering this stuff. But to me, and I've talked about this all week, just the decisions made on the roster, the offensive line depth is a concern. Dan and I talked about that earlier. Where are you with your assessment of it, just starting there with the roster decisions?
Yeah, Lilo, well, it's interesting because I was working on a story yesterday with my colleague Adam Johns, and I kind of stepped back. It'll be out next week, and it's kind of like a look back of everything that's kind of happened in camp and some of the things we've been seeing and hearing and where this team's at. And I stepped back. I said, this is almost too rosy of a picture that we've painted of this team, because – and I think it's a case of we're all trying to balance what's relative, right? Like, this team is the best roster we've seen since 2018, right? It's the most experience, it's the most talent, it's the most depth across the board. However, I still, like, somebody asked me yesterday, like, oh, well, what's your record prediction? I'm still saying 9-8. Like, I'm not, you know, so you find yourself kind of trying to toe this line of not so much hyperbole, but it's like, this is a good team. Like, they have so many returning players back from a team that was decent last year. And I also think that we're all kind of having the same tug of war with the quarterback, right? Because if Caleb Williams is what we've kind of seen, what we've heard, what we're expecting, what he could be, then some of those roster decisions you talk about, Layla, because I mean, you're right. You look at the offensive line, I think that's the number one concern right now. You look at edge rush. Is there enough to help Montez Sweat? I don't know. You can talk about depth in the interior, the D-line, all those things. But if this guy is who he could be, that's what great quarterbacks do that this town's never seen, which is great quarterbacks mask roster deficiencies. So we'll see if that happens. But yeah, you find yourself in this moment where you're like, oh, wow, this team looks really good, but we're also kind of relating it to a lot of the teams that we've covered on Cutdown Day over the past, you know, for me, it's been 12 years.
Well, and to me, the goal of building a team is so your quarterback doesn't have to mask deficiencies, especially when he's a rookie. I felt this way about the last quarterback. The problem shouldn't largely rest on you. I understand that the pay dictates that that will be the case, but it can be egregious, and it starts at the line to me, and that's where I get worried.
Yeah, and it's fair to worry about that. You know, I've mentioned this about the offensive line since the spring, and my opinion hasn't changed. There's a massive variance with this, how this group can perform. You look at Tevin Jenkins, I think he's a perfect example of this. If that guy's healthy for 17 games, and it's a massive if when you look at his career, he's a Pro Bowler, and he's probably getting a contract extension. You've seen Darnell Wright, what he did as a rookie, and you can think to yourself, oh, wow, this guy's got Pro Bowl talent in year two. Braxton Jones, I think, has done enough where you can talk yourself into the fact that he's a dependable left tackle. If Nate Davis is available for you, do you think that you've gotten the Nate Davis that they paid for, you know, in March of 2023? So you could have these conversations with yourself, and then you go to the flip side. You go look at the injuries. You look at the lack of reliability. You wonder if Braxton Jones is the right guy at left tackle. And, oh, guess what? The third rounder that you drafted to theoretically either supplant or back him up has barely practiced. So it's a wide variance between how this group can do. I do agree with Poles. I do think the depth is better here than it's been over the past couple of years. I think you look at Orion Bates and a Matt Pryor, that those are your kind of top two backups. I think you probably feel better about those two guys than other guys. But we've all seen quarterbacks' rookie seasons ruined because of a porous offensive line. I will say, though, the one thing the Bears are probably hoping for, well, two things the Bears are hoping for. They obviously think that their offensive line is fine. But I think they're thinking, A, we've got a quarterback who's going to be pretty good. But B, they have the receivers that no other rookie quarterback has had. So if the offensive line isn't as good as they were hoping or as they want it to be, well, they've got guys that are going to be getting open a lot easier than receivers that other rookie quarterbacks have.
I had this conversation yesterday when I filled in on the afternoon show asking Dave Wanstead about it because, you know, I've been around Dave and I know how big he is about building a quarterback's confidence. And that was something always really important to him about getting a quarterback established with some easy throws, let them work their way in, work within the constraints of use your receivers and let them run after the pass. And to me, that falls back into not necessarily defeatism, but it's always been an ultra conservative small C way of looking at quarterbacking. And that's where this leap of faith is. And I think you nailed it, Kevin, this if he's what we keep allowing ourselves to think he could be, then he's bending time and space. You are not telling him work within the confines of the offense. He sees it as there are no confines to an offense. I see things you don't see. I see things the defense doesn't see. Let me cook. And I want to know when one is expected to meet the other.
You know, Jaquan Brisker talked to us yesterday, and he was describing a play from early on in camp when he was in coverage. And he saw the throw going up, and he kind of was like, well, that throw is not going to be completed. Like, I'm fine. And then it was completed. Like, as you said, Dan, he's able to make these plays that – you know, other guys shouldn't make, that makes defenses think that they have. And, you know, I remember, like, you go back to the Jay Cutler days, right? There was this idea that Jay believed, and for good reason, that he could make every single throw. And Jay Cutler made some throws that were just amazing, right? There's a difference, I think, with this guy, because I think there is a little bit of a better understanding. We'll see, obviously, of not forcing things, which I think got Jay into trouble at times. And I just realized I found myself comparing Caleb Williams to Jay Cutler.
Yeah, but the big difference is Caleb Williams doesn't want to let his teammates down.
Yeah, and Dan, when you hear the stories about Caleb Williams in the building, like, they are just different than every quarterback I've been around. And I don't mean that as a slight to some of them, but it's just, I think Caleb is on a different level of the way he communicates with players and the way he kind of galvanizes that place. And I think from a football standpoint, you know, Ryan Pohl says he wants Caleb Williams to lean on his skill players. He says, you have DJ Moore, you have Keenan Allen, you have Roma Dunze, you have Cole Kmet, you have DeAndre Swift, lean on them. You do not have to put this team in the back. Oh, by the way, you also have a defense that could be very good. So he's going to want them to lean on him, but you're right, Dan, because I think Caleb is going to just periodically go off script and he's going to make these plays. They're like, oh my goodness, nobody, you know, there's a handful of guys on earth that can make some of those plays. And I think we've seen that he's got those capabilities. So you're right. I think harnessing it and Shane Waldron allowing Caleb Williams the freedom, that's going to be this interesting, you know, not I want to say battle, but this narrative that we'll watch play out over the first month.
Yeah, I think you're also going to see more tendencies of what he's used to doing in the first few weeks of the season, just because of how you saw that play out in the preseason. Like, he didn't always throw to the biggest name on the field. He would find Gerald Everett in the flat, you know, as there were things like that going on. So Roma Dunze fake touchdown that didn't count. Obviously, I think he's trying to establish a pattern with him and comfortability level there. I don't even think anything needs to be said when it comes to Keenan Allen and DJ Moore. I think they're great. So to me, you're going to kind of see him, I think, trust what he knows how to do first, maybe more so than individuals' strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that too, because he's had so much success in his football career that he has all this confidence, that he has this ability to, like, I know I can make this play right now and it's going to be okay. You know, the biggest challenge I think this guy's going to face is the defenses. He's just going to see coverages. He's going to see disguises he's never seen before. And he talked about that. You know, we've heard Matt Eberflus talk about, Eberflus is throwing everything at him because he wants Caleb Williams to have seen everything he possibly can before that first game so that nothing is surprising. Obviously there's going to be surprises, but one thing too, to touch on a Caleb Williams kind of physical trait, which has really been the thing that's probably stood out to me the most since I first saw him in rookie camp, is the accuracy, right? Like, you see him make these throws in the move and you're like, oh my God, that's great. Look at him throwing off platform, all that stuff. But it's not so much that he's completing the passes. It's where the passes are going. Like, he's still able to hit these guys in stride when he's on the move. And he hits, like, we talked earlier, I'm sure, in camp about the 7-on-7 stuff. Like, it's just like, boom, boom, boom. Like, you're not thinking twice as you're watching it. And we've had other quarterbacks here where 7-on-7 wasn't as smooth as it was with him. And I think that accuracy is going to really help him if the offensive line has struggles, if the defenses are throwing things at him he hasn't seen, that he has that rare accuracy that he can lean on.
What else sticks out to you when it comes to the information you received this week, either about roster or just observations leading into the opener?
Yeah, I was going through the roster this morning and just kind of compare and contrast and thinking about, you know, I mentioned the offensive line depth is one thing that they feel really good about. I think what's fascinating is how few new players are on this team. And the new players are kind of big names. There's Caleb, there's Keenan, you know, there's Gerald Everett, who I think is going to play an interesting role, Kevin Byard. There's so many returning players. They only have 5 rookies on the 53. They had 15 rookies 2 years ago. They had 10 rookies last year. And I think that they feel like they have built this thing to a point where, you know, you don't need so many young players. You don't need all these waiver claims. You don't need to go kind of find guys to plug in. Now, they did make those trades, which are kind of essentially waiver claims. But I think that there's this feeling of, okay, we have our foundation. And I've said it to you guys before, and I'm going to say it a lot to kind of as a way of tempering expectations. This thing is built really well for 2025, right? Like, I just think that, like, 2024 could be really fun. We'll see how good this team is, but you look at the ages of the players, the experience level of the players, the talent level of the players, and you look at the draft stuff, the draft capital they still have next year, and the money they're going to have to spend next year. Like, you're like, you can kind of like, I know we don't want to talk about next year yet. We haven't even the first game of this year. But when I think about what Ryan Poles has built and kind of the patience he's been allowed to have, you think you can kind of let your mind wander a little bit into what this thing could look like next season, especially if he takes off this year.
This fits perfectly with the phrase that Ryan Poles used, on which I was hoping for a follow-up. When Poles was talking about the draft history and Brisker and Gordon and where the roster was, and he mentioned the term, we're in that second phase. And I thought, okay, if you're in the second phase now, and I think it's reasonable to imagine, you know, there's bottoming out, there's you know, making sure you fix all your cap mishigas, and then you get your buildup. And the second phase would be the buildup. But I would love to know how many phases are there in this plan. How far away could anything happen this year to make you reconsider? Like the 2015 Cubs, could you say, hey, we're a year early and we're better than we thought. We're healthier than we thought. Let's go win it right damn now. I don't know how they have it mapped out, but is that what you do? When he said second phase, do you know, has he ever talked about that before and how many there are?
It's a great point, Dan, because one of those things where in the moment, you know, he was answering Herb Howard's question, yes, about wide receivers when he talked about that. And he was going through the way that they've overhauled receivers, and he said second phase. And I was looking at that quote just an hour ago, and I was having the same thought you had, where we haven't heard him talk about that. But you're right, because I do think Ryan Poles has shown a flexibility. You can look at the Chase Claypool, right? You can look at both sides of the Claypool decision. The decision to say, I'm just going to go get this guy because I know we need wide receivers and he's available and he's talented. I'm just going to get him. And then it didn't work. And it's like, you know, I'm just going to move on. And it's going to be fine. And, oh, Keenan Allen's available. I'm going to go get him. So I do think that you can lay out a scenario with late October, if this team is 6-2, right, and he feels good about where Caleb Williams is at, and maybe they need a tackle. Maybe they need another edge rusher, and they can go make that move in October, November. They could. I do think that he's very – you know, one of the things he said on early on before – I think this was – I remember sitting down with him at the owners' meetings his first time, so March 2022. He said, this team hasn't had sustained success. You look at, you had 05-06, then nothing. You had 01, then nothing. You had 18, then nothing, right? You had 2010, nothing. Like, you go on and on, and it's just like, where is the four playoffs, you know, appearances in a row? Where is the six division titles in 8 years? Like, that's what he's wanted to build. So he's had this, and he's gotten the runway to do it, and he's, a lot of things have worked in his favor, and now he has the quarterback. So I think it's going to be this balance, Dan, where it's like, that's his ultimate goal, is building something, like every GM, building something that's going to last. But I think in this city specifically, it means a little more because the Bears have struggled so much to do that since the 80s. So I am curious to see what happens if they have a really good record at the end of this, or around the trade deadline. How aggressive is he to just go for it versus knowing, hey, we can ride this thing out for another 3, 4, 5 years if everything's working out in the right way.
Great stuff, Fish. Have a good long weekend.
Wait a second.
All right, take what? Yes. Uh-oh.
Do you think that Miami of Ohio beats Northwestern at home again this year?
Of course not, Layla. I picked Northwestern to win every game.
I'm sure you picked Northwestern the last time, but that was pretty crazy.
Yeah, it was. No, you know what? They always say this about Ryan Field, that it was like the weirdest place for road teams to play, specifically Big Ten.
Now it is.
Yeah. Now, you want to talk about a weird place to play. Go on Lake Michigan in front of, I don't know how many people are going to be there tomorrow. I will be there tomorrow, obviously. But I'm not sure how many people will be out there. I'm not sure what the wind's going to be like.
Bingo.
But yeah, give me some weird stadium stuff, and we'll see. So. Yeah, it should be fun.
It will be fun. Thanks for entertaining me on that one.
All right. Go Cats.
Yeah. There it is. He's back.
That's Kevin Fishbane of The Athletic. Next up, let's talk a little bit of college football. There was some stuff going on last night. I know you and Studs before the show were doing...
Studs and I were the weirdos watching the...
No, you were doing your little college... I'll sit back and eavesdrop.
Is it the sickos committee? Are we the ones watching like the... It wasn't random college football. It was the game to watch last night. I did watch the other game, Illini. What's up?
I watched the first half of the Illinois game.
That's all you really needed to watch. Hey, man, what they needed to do.
I was watching Rutgers versus Howard.
Oh,
hell yeah.
I was having videos sent to me of Tulane welcoming the Southeastern Louisiana something.
SELU.
What are they? Those things? I don't know what they are.
I don't know what the mascot is.
But it was 52-0, and it wasn't much of a game. The Lions. Southeastern Louisiana Lions.
The Lion mascot is named Rumi, for reasons I don't know.
Big in the hips, Rumi.
Hey, not everything is about Fat Eagle.
No, that was Hannibal Lecter. The late, great Hannibal Lecter, as one presidential candidate calls him, even though he didn't actually exist. And I'm not even going to begin. So let's a little college football next on the...
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Miller out of the shotgun. 5 seconds to go. He gets it off. It's short of the end zone. They wrestle for it, but time has expired, and the Buffaloes will win it.
Some of you got upset that we got the W. Some of you know, I'm really mad that we didn't get the L. So, God bless you all. You have to wait again until next week.
Is this really how he's going to run the football team? Like, really? The motivation to win games is to prove your doubters wrong. Don't you have anything other than that?
No, that is, I mean,
don't you have another
what does he have?
Play?
They hadn't won a game since October 7th.
Still, but fighting with the media and telling that one local writer or columnist, you're not going to answer his questions anymore. What are we doing here? What kind of example are you setting? Coach Prime? Oh, you got to wait for us to lose. You're just just knock it off. It's just the most tired, lame-ass stuff. Just make your team better and win games. Everybody's happy. No, he's just garbage. Are they any good? No, right?
I mean, right? We're trying to figure that out. I just, you know, if there was ever a team to kind of test you the first week, I think North Dakota State is up there. Like, that's how they made their program famous. They're an FCS staple. They're a championship game staple. There's a reason. But the idea that they were going to host this team and just think they were going to win was not ever the case for me. I don't know about you, Adam.
I think that any team, any mid-level FBS team, which is what Colorado barely is right now, scheduling NDSU is crazy.
It's
if you're not
confident.
Georgia, you shouldn't be scheduling them.
I mean, that's it. Like, this is their program that has been good, not just for a few years. They've had NFL talent for 10 years.
I think they said last night they've won, like, up and before last night, they'd won 9 out of their last 10 FBS matchups.
And we also know that because of NIL and the transfer portal, that the ability for talent to find places to play. These talented players have more agency than ever to decide where they're going, and the giant programs can't stockpile 4-5 deep while making everybody happy with playing time.
The other piece of this that is worth noting is while Deion Sanders has this pulpit of a press conference, and I understand we're no stranger to his style, really. I mean, he's been doing this since before it was popular. You could argue he partially created it. Nobody's taking that away from him. I think he thinks he's defending his players. I understand that. There's going to be a lot of smoke and mirrors with a team that lost 6 straight games to end their season after largely he put them on the map. At the end of the day, it's still going to come down to football. And I think he knows that ultimately, but maybe he feels like he has to do this. He crossed a line. There's not a doubt that he crossed a line when it comes to banning accountability in your press conference. That's why you're there. If you can't talk about simple football, then something else is afoot. And frankly, a lot of this had happened at Jackson State as well, regarding a allegation against a player. A much more serious discussion was taking place there. I think he thinks he's protecting them, but there's got to be some accountability on a level higher than him. But there's a piece of this that I think is worth illustrating. And that's that Colorado famously said when it hired him. We joke about the boosters paying Jimbo Fisher's contract at Texas A&M. They were sitting on a sea of oil. That's not the case at Colorado. They had to borrow money. And they were discussing late in the game last night when it was still a very competitive game, the economic impact of what they thought hiring him was going to bring and how essentially they were betting on the come. And I feel like all of this comes into play here when we're watching this game to open the season on national television last night.
Well, I know now, having gone through with 2 kids and college applications, people don't want to think that a football program can affect overall admission rates.
Oh, but it can.
You better believe it does.
Alabama Rush mean anything to you?
You
think the University of Alabama was this popular of a school? It was always popular, but to this extent?
Colorado had a rising tide for a while, in large part because of how gorgeous the campus is, because of the life of in Boulder, and they were one of the first to relax marijuana laws. There were the especially in the Chicago area. Colorado has become incredibly popular. And
my best friend from growing up specifically chose to go to Fort Collins for school because he wanted to be in Colorado.
And Texas CU was always a popular destination.
Well, especially too, even
growing up, it was always popular.
The University of Denver has a huge Chicago connection.
And that's a private school.
And Colorado College is a terrific school. Not to mention the engineers who want to go to Colorado School of Mines, which is an elite school out there.
And they have a football program that actually recruits.
The Colorado School of Mines does?
Yeah, it
really
does, yeah.
But Colorado itself and the application total. Man, I couldn't believe when you start looking at the average ACT scores, like what happened to Clemson. Clemson was just an academic afterthought forever.
Think about the importance of Don Staley to South Carolina.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. And look, I would be lying if I said that at the time Duke's basketball program and what they were doing in 1986 didn't attract me, if I didn't think that was cool, where they and all the attention that they got because of their basketball program, and frankly, it helped change my parents' minds about making it acceptable for me to go somewhere in the South to school grudgingly, because there was, I don't know,
the research triangle didn't do it for them.
No, it wasn't where one is supposed to go. But eventually, you wear them down. But the national profile for the basketball program, when you start crunching the numbers of marketing dollars that it means, like I saw something where the Colorado president said something like, whatever they're paying Deion Sanders, it's meant $60 million, and that was last year. I can only imagine with another class and another year, the attention that it brings that university. We like to think that we're deeper than that we care more about the mission of higher education, but sometimes, man, you score that football and things are all good.
And to me, then the discussion becomes, is he above reproach when it comes to how he is getting questioned in press conferences? I say the answer is no. You have to have those questions asked of you, especially when Colorado is a public school. And oftentimes in these cases, famously, you know, Jim Calhoun was the highest paid employee in Connecticut for a long time, a state employee. Like, you're going to have to face that, Dion. But you're yeah. strong enough and smart enough to figure out a way to reply and still promote and protect your players. Like, I know he's got that in him.
No, I agree that he should be held to the same standard as we hold these other coaches.
He's not beyond reproach in that respect. But I understand embracing the phenomenon. I think there is a way to be able to do both that's going to help everyone win. You know, we had all our eyes on Colorado last night watching the game, and it was entertaining. Let's face it. Like, what we saw out of Shedeur Sanders throwing for 445 yards, what we saw out of Martin, like, that's exactly what you want to watch in a game. If you like defense, I don't know that modern college football is for you, but what
Especially
did you think
the Colorado
of
the team?
Well, and the strategy, right? Studs, like, it,
strategy by both teams was kind of weird defensively. Like, if you're, so first of all, Colorado, like, they pretty clearly just want to play man defense, and they were pretty clearly bad at it. So I don't know if they're going to adjust that. But North Dakota State came out basically like on one of the touchdowns, they were running like man free, and it was just like not a good idea when the other team has better talent.
I was
going to
say, you don't do that, like, if the other guys are faster.
Like, if yeah, I mean, yeah. Travis Hunter is running all over the field.
And like the book on Shedeur Sanders is run a pre-snap zone, like shift your zone post-snap and blitz the hell out of him. And they weren't really doing that. Mostly in the first half, they weren't really doing that. They kind of started blitzing a little bit, but like, so there was that. So,
I actually thought the blitzing was a bad idea just because of how poor the secondary was.
And yeah, because they couldn't cover also. They couldn't cover Travis Hunter. So like, there was one kid that was just getting picked on. And then there was the Travis Hunter the last touchdown he scored. That was crazy.
Well, and also to me, when the game is still, especially in college football, when the game is still close in the fourth quarter, like it was, then your athletes are going to out-athlete at that level, especially when it is an FBS, FCS situation. This is no knock on North Dakota State. I incredibly respect their program. But they're probably not going to be as tired as the opposing team when you consider how easy Sanders and Travis Hunter made that look. Shedeur Sanders was outstanding.
A clarification is expected here. Colorado School of Mines with an N, not School of Mimes.
Mimes?
Not Mimes. It is an engineering school. It's for like metallurgy and all that. It is the Colorado School of Mines, M-I-N-E-S. And apparently 217, in all seriousness, says the Colorado School of Mines was the only team that could slow down Tyson Bagent in college.
Yeah, they have a good football program.
Is that true? They beat the Bagency?
I don't know, but they have a decent football program. Like, we always knew somebody growing up who got recruited by there, and then they also like science, and it worked out.
They would never have beaten them if Tyson Bagent's dad, Shrek, were there screaming at everybody.
Also, if you want to get a job in oil, you know, getting a geology degree is a pretty good idea. Word to the wise. Don't be mean to Tyson Bagent's dad. He's having a good time in life. He is. He is having a good time outside.
Okay.
He is, though.
Okay.
You can't argue with that.
Yeah, I still would. I would like him to fall into a sinkhole.
He'd make the sinkhole fun.
We'd still hear him down there.
Travis Bagent would make a sinkhole fun.
Okay, that's fun. Next,
nope. You just need to hang out more.
I'm going to introduce you to the most dominant athlete you don't know.
Bernstein and Holmes, your midday destination for Chicago sports talk on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Tonight, the Cubs continue their road trip in D.C. against the Nasty Nats.
Pre-game
coverage begins at 5:10. First pitch at 5:45 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network.
Are they nasty? I don't think they're very good.
The Nasty Nats. I don't know. Everything's standing in the Cubs' way right now. They can't take any opponent lightly. They're all good. So I want to introduce you to an athlete. And I saw this story and I said, wait, this can't be real. Because I saw the pictures of him competing. And I said, whoa, 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 this is photoshopped. And it's not. This man's name is Morteza Mirzadselakjani.
Morteza
Mirzadselakjani. And he already has two Paralympic gold medals. But the Iranian is the not-so-secret weapon, this is from CNN, of his country's men's sitting volleyball team. I don't know if you've seen this. It is exactly what it sounds like. It is sitting volleyball. He's 36 years old. And you think, well, why is he so good at sitting volleyball? He's 8'1".
That's incredible.
He stands 8'1". And he's known by the first two syllables of his last name, Merzad. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Mehrzad, Merzad. He's the tallest Paralympian in history, and he is tied as the second tallest man in the world. He was diagnosed with acromegaly at a young age, and that, as you know, causes an excess of growth hormone to reach the bloodstream. And then as a teenager, a fractured pelvis caused by a bike accident stopped his right leg from growing. So his right leg is shorter than his left and makes it difficult to walk. So he plays sitting volleyball. And there's pictures of him with his teammates that are just astonishing. You can't imagine a human being like this. It was one thing to look at, you know, Wemby or look at Taco Fall or some of these guys. This guy's 8'1". And it was really interesting that he's talking about there's pressure on him because of the expectations that they have won two gold medals. He says, our biggest challenge, he says, the Iranian people expect us to become champions. That it puts a heavy responsibility on the athletes and the coaches. I wonder if they have rules about volleyball rotation the same way that standing volleyball has, because I think the entire opposing team's strategy would be to keep it away from that guy. And I don't know exactly what the rules are, but it is the pictures look fake.
Yeah, he stands tall. You know, he stands tall among his peers. It's hard when you have a condition that would give people talk about wanting to be taller all the time. You know,
I wish I were a little bit taller.
Right.
I wish I was a baller.
But I thought there's a quote in the story from CNN that I thought was really telling. Playing sitting volleyball helped me a lot, he said. The physique that I once considered as very bad has helped me in this game, and I can make good use of it. And what a rewarding thing that must be.
And I know what you're thinking. How tall is he in his chair? So I want you to picture this. This is a person sitting in a chair with his arms raised while playing. His actual effective height, over 6 feet. While sitting with his arms over 6 feet. And how there isn't an opposing team that's going to have an answer for that at any point. But yes, he came to the game late. And I would imagine if you are a sitting volleyball coach and you see somebody who would qualify for the Paralympics who happens to be 8'1", you're probably recruiting that person.
I'm happy that he feels better after what happened to him. That's a serious condition.
Yeah, I was actually, we were talking about acromegaly. There was one NBA draft. What was his name? Pavel Podkolzin. Look him. I believe Pavel Podkolzin also was acromegalac. And we were at a remote. I think it was an auto show remote, actually. And a giant man came up to me and introduced himself. And he said, I'm also acromegalac. He said, thank you for bringing attention to the condition. And it was just really interesting. And he was explaining what it is and when it takes effect. And this guy was, I mean, just a massive human. What, Pavel Podkolzin?
That's him.
Podkolzin. Yeah, I thought he sounded familiar. He's a former Dallas Maverick.
Yeah, 39 years old.
Wonder what he's doing these days. And obviously, sometimes the lifespan for acromegalax is shorter just because of what your heart is being asked to do. I believe Andre the Giant suffered from either this or a form of this also. And he found a way to make it work in a lot of ways.
I love the Paralympics for many reasons. And to just hear the stories of opportunity and success and achievement always make me happy. And I think when I can't imagine, and I'm lucky that I can't imagine a lot of the setbacks that people have gone through, but it's a great thing to be able to hear quotes like that, where you feel like you fit in and you feel like you found a place where you can use your skills to an advantage.
Well, the Paralympics, it's been important for, you know, our organization at Camp One Step and Children's Oncology Services, because we have a former camper and counselor who is a multiple time gold medalist in triathlon.
They're athletes.
Yeah, Haley Danisevich, who's just
they're incredible
just
an athletes,
absolute athletic monster. Yeah, she's fantastic, and just I mean, and beat people by wide margins, and it's. The stories of how and why and how they get to sports and how they become passionate about it, despite all of these limitations. It's also super cool to see the way that sports have met them halfway in the other direction of coming up with competitive, interesting, compelling, challenging sports that aren't sort of condescending versions of other sports necessarily.
No, yeah, that's it. They're athletes. This is a competition just like anything else. And, you know, I know we talk a lot about the University of Illinois, and I know, Dan, you get flack sometimes, but they're considered the leader when it comes to wheelchair marathons and wheelchair racing. They're considered one of the best places in the country for the athletes that they've produced and the program that they have. And that's one of my favorite parts about broadcasting the marathon. And it is I love the Olympics because you get to learn about new people and you get to learn about new athletes. And it's that part of it is always super rewarding. And just to hear stories of people feeling like they've achieved something that they knew they could is always something that makes me happy.
And here's Angry Texter. It's the weekend leading up to the Bears opener, and you're talking about this? Talk Chicago sports.
It's not the weekend leading up to the Bears opener. Yeah. That's next week.
Yeah. Dumbass.
I don't know what you're going to open on Sunday other than a can of whoop butt versus yourself.
Go ahead. Sit in front of the TV.
I don't know what you plan on watching at noon on Sunday. Yeah, you might be disappointed.
If the 20 minutes talking about the Bears long snapper wasn't enough for you, I don't know what to tell you. This sucks. Talk Chicago. Fine. Chicago sports, Chicago sports, Chicago sports.
Something tells me this isn't about us.
No, it's just about
but good luck. Turn it on Sunday. Tell me what you think.
Sit in front of the TV. Enjoy that Bears game. Have fun. Next up, Mike Sando of The Athletic has his annual quarterback tiers rankings out. He's going to explain the methodology and the results next on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.